You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, we're talking with Tasha Alls. She's in Canada right now. Tasha, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Hi, Brainerd. Thank you for talking to me.
Let's begin by talking a little bit about what you're working on now. I want to ask you different aspects about what you're doing, but what are you working on now? What's happening in your studio in terms of painting or whatever it is that you're doing?
Currently, I'm working on a body of work that's going to be shown in January in Montreal at Almu. I've been working basically with the idea of loss and life and death, basically, you know, what our landscape, what nature is going through at the moment in the whole, you know, looming ecological crises. And I've been sort of trying to find a way into accessing that from a very human scale, because I find as you know, we all understand what's going on in a very abstract way, but I also find that it's something that's quite difficult to really feel and take in and face. And I also find we usually have about two entry points into landscape through myth. So I'm using sometimes symbols of mermaids, which I love, because a mermaid is on two accounts, is kind of double-edged sword symbol. She's a symbol of life and a protector of life in many cases, but she's also a symbol of death, and how many sirens would be foreshadowing the death of humans. We're singing them into their death. And so that's one symbol that's appearing in the works. And sometimes I'm just painting endangered species, and they all have a particular outward gaze, kind of my way of bringing the viewer kind of face to face with something in a very human way, like a kind of greeting, as humans greet each other, looking at each other face to face. And the paintings are sometimes very dark, there's a lot of black, there's a lot of nothingness, and sometimes very colorful also. So I think this body of work is represents a slight shift in my thinking and my questioning about landscape as well, and starting to, I think that came to something that I began to be reading, an idea that I liked very much. It was from Joanna Macy, where I first encountered it, which is this idea of, in order for anything to change, that there needs to be a shift in consciousness about how we perceive the landscape.
Sorry to interrupt, but who was that idea? You said that idea was, I didn't catch that word, where that idea came from.
From Joanna Macy, and kind of deep ecology type of thinking.
Yeah. So explain that. I'm open to that. Yeah, exactly. What does that mean?
It's essentially understanding our own selves differently and shifting a sense of nature. You know, one thing I've been, you know, working with a long time is I'm trying to dissolve certain concepts that we have of landscape and certain concepts that we have of nature. One being this concept of nature as something that is other. And so this Joanna Macy proposes that we need to shift our consciousness basically to see ourselves as one aspect of a whole living planet, which I like very much, because this also dissolves the idea of other, and it's a big philosophical question, isn't it? And a big spiritual question at the same time.
It is. So maybe we should talk a little bit about, in terms of exploring that more. And just to be clear, because I'm not sure I came across well, where will this show be in Montreal?
I will be at a gallery called Art Mur. The English translation for that is Art Wall.
And when does that show open?
The show opens on the 16th of January.
Okay. And do you also teach in Canada? Are you doing other things, or you're just painting now?
I'm just painting. Just painting. It's wonderful.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the psycho-spiritual landscapes, as they've been called. What, and perhaps that feeds into exactly what you were just talking about, but what does that mean to you, a kind of psycho-spiritual landscape? You've talked about different entrances into the landscape, which I like a lot, like through myth with the mermaids, but can you explain what psycho-spiritual means in this context?
Exactly that. That was a word I kind of proposed or developed whilst I was doing my master's. And it's in order to emphasize that it's not about the material or the formal aspect of landscapes, or the formal aspect such as, you know, tree as a tree, body as body, but that my emphasis and my interest was always in that thing which is quite difficult to describe, but landscape as an entry point into something else. Landscape as a kind of reflection of the human self. Landscape also as it's been, you know, for all humanities, an entry point into the spiritual as well, whether it is kind of from, again, the shamanic aspect, but also, you know, within Christianity as well, or any type spirituality, there is something about nature. I think
so
sometimes that's the first way that people can feel something beyond the sort of personal human self. And at the same time, it also inhabits a huge place within our psychological beings, within our cultures, as it's been used for the settings of so many, you know, for fairy tales and myths, et cetera, et cetera. So this is why.
Yeah, it reminds me of a, which I don't know a lot about, but the myth of, you know, Gaia, the earth as a kind of, you know, living being that we're all part of, this kind of mother or something. So that's sort of this very expanded idea of what a landscape is, or maybe expanded isn't the right word, but it, in that sense, it also ties into all this ecological things that are happening, which you said are in a way hard to grasp and understand.
Yes, I think it's both an example of it and it is it at the same time. I think it's a kind of reminder of the aspect of you know, this amazing aspect of life, of being alive, and that it is all quite interconnected, and the more one looks into how a plant or an animal behaves, is more one understands another aspect about life, which is different.
So in a way, you know, I mean, perhaps one thing is that your work is, or could be, kind of transformational in the sense that it's actually, and just correct me if I'm wrong, but that it's as opposed to work being decorative and, you know, decorative, not in a negative sense at all. There's plenty of work that's just about, you know, it's visual quality and all kinds of aspects of beauty or poetry that can come with that. But in your case, it feels like the work is actually meant to actually change the way people think, the way they feel, and perhaps change our relationship to the planet. Is that correct, or am I overstating that?
I think that's a really big task at hand. I think for myself, the work is kind of a way to keep asking the questions. I would hope that at some point it would be able to communicate something. You know, I think painting has and many art forms, not just painting, but I think art has this way of being able to communicate something to people, sometimes on a conceptual intellectual level and sometimes on a very felt level. And I like the way that this kind of very felt level can operate, because, you know, I'm sure you've had this with artwork as well, where it, you have an experience with it. Sometimes you can't explain it fully, and because of that, you keep maybe thinking about that. And so it prompts, like, art can prompt people to ask questions, and art can prompt people to feel something that makes them want to ask questions and perhaps start looking at things differently. So, yes, I would hope that my, you know, work could do that.
And does that happen when you're having exhibits, like to have conversations with people, or maybe it's like discussions, but do you find that you're often in a dialogue, whether it's, I don't know, sharing, you know, similar ways of thinking or questions that people have? Are there, it's what I'm asking, questions that people ask literally that, come up or that are around the exhibition of your work?
Sometimes. Sometimes that happens, and sometimes people feel things very strongly, or we have some discussions, and it gets quite interesting. It's very interesting when people come up on their own. They have to say on their own as well.
Yeah, I really love your work, and it sounds, you know, the work now with, you're saying that's a series that's being exhibited now that also has the symbol of mermaids in it. Is that correct?
Yeah, in January. Yes.
And so I went over that kind of quick. We moved on to other things, but what does the mermaid mean for you in this context? Because though you began talking about it, it sounds like it may mean something different from how we often see mermaids portrayed. Or
I think the mermaid for me is a kind of symbol of the edge that we're at, which and is a kind of turning point, is a kind of warning, it's a kind of signal, and a signal of assessment of this is where we are, and it could go either way. You know, are we going to change something and protect life, or are we going to keep going as we're going, you know, into a potential death? And that's what the mermaid is for me. She's like the, what is that called? You know, when you're right at the crossroads.
Right.
Whether we've passed that point already, I don't know. But I think that's, she's really this kind of symbol of going like, hey, wake up. We can go two ways here. It's up to you. Mm. What you want to do.
I like that. And so let's move back a little bit, because before the interview is done, I'd like to talk a little bit how you first, you know, started exhibiting in Canada. After school, you went to Goldsmiths, is that correct, in
yes,
London?
Yes, I did. Yes.
And so what happened after that? Where were your first shows or what you considered was like a first show that was important for you that changed your career?
Well, after Goldsmiths, I got invited to do a bunch of shows in Korea, also in London. And I think that the big thing changer for me wasn't a big career thing, but I made a decision to move to the countryside for 2 years because I wanted to. I felt I was painting from these concepts about what nature is, and I wanted to understand that on a daily basis. So I did that.
And where was the countryside? What countryside was that?
That was in England. That was in East Sussex in a place called Forest Row, in the Ashdown Forest, which is a big conservation area, which was amazing, and I learned so much. But it was very terrible for an art career. It was very terrible for my financial circumstances, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So in a way, I kind of, you know, everything sort of broke down, and I came back to Canada. That's where my family is, and have been sort of starting to build everything up again from that point. So myself and another artist, Sunny Sisley, we proposed the show to Amu. So this will be the first big show that I've had in quite some time now, actually. So you're reaching me at a point where it's like my career almost dissolved for a while, and my ideas, and gave me time to maybe shift my thinking and my understanding of my subject and begin to approach, you know, working maybe in a slightly different way, or at least from a slightly different vantage point. So I almost feel like I'm starting over again, you know, as we talk about, you know, artists, and you have these many lives. So I'm just coming up into gear again, really.
And so between all these, between the graduation and now, then there's been a lot of struggling and finding what it means to have your, was your work always selling throughout there, or you just, you know, dealt with not having the finances you need? I'm curious about survival and how it turned into
survival.
This wonderful situation you're in now.
Yeah, well, I've also had a lot of, you know, I was really lucky. I kind of lucky in some ways, not lucky. Before I went to Goldsmiths, I had this, you know, a couple of years. I left my full-time job, a part-time job, and I started, you know, career-wise, all the career aspects were starting to go up, and, you know, galleries and shows, and I was starting to make sales and grants, things like this. And then when I came to England, did my master's, like, all of the sort of business aspects went flat, you know. I think I'm sort of having to relearn all of that in a way.
But how did things come around with the difficulty of what you're saying? How did things suddenly become financially solvent again, where you're selling work and not having to go back to your job or do other things?
Yeah. Well, I think just for me, I've had a lot of support, and so I kind of a very lucky person in that way. But and
by support, you mean there were other people that were interested in your work, or patrons, or what do you mean by a lot
patrons,
of support?
Yeah, like patronage support. You know, my family's been very supportive too. So I'm basically at the point where I'm gathering kind of more of the information of how do I make this more financial for myself? Because right now it's not. I'm doing it, but it's not right now. It's not paying in money. But I think you just have to, you know, as ours, you just have to find ways to keep going, and the more that you do it, the more that, I don't know, I think more now as I'm realizing is just that thing, actually starting to think about sort of the more strategic aspect of where I might do a show and why, or especially in Quebec, a lot of grant writing and thinking through of, for example, I'm preparing for a residency as well in February, March, but also thinking about, okay, what can come out of that residency and how can I use that and leverage that to reach out to more people? And then eventually, how can I use the show to reach out to more people and try and get some people more interested in coming in and buying works, et cetera? So I think that's maybe the difference of understanding that each time, you know, when we show things or when we create things is an opportunity to really try and reach out to as many people as possible. And that's really important for an artist, that we need to reach out to as many people as possible and propose things.
Propose things, you said. Yeah, I mean, propose things
and not to be shy about, you know, proposing things to, you know, other people who are part of, you know, all the functional aspects of the art world, whether it's a gallery or a, you know, museum, or a chance for exhibition, a chance for residency, a chance for some kind of publication, a chance for meeting buyers and collectors. But that, yeah, an important important to get out there.
You're a turning point right now.
I'm at a turning point. Yeah. I'm at a turning point right now. And I've learned a lot from people who I share studio with, showing with. I've never met an artist who's been so forward and out in creating proposals and, really good self-belief and press work, and just getting out and looking for opportunities and looking to present their work and opportunities, and it really pays. And I'm seeing this, and I've been observing this for the last year, and watching how, it might take some, it doesn't necessarily happen straight away for an artist, but it will happen. And once it does, it snowballs, right? So opportunities bring more opportunities. But I think that as an artist, you also have to make that happen and create those opportunities for yourself. Whereas I used to just wait for other people to invite me. I couldn't stick my hand out there. And things, I was lucky, I did get invited to do a lot of things. But now I'm realizing that it's really important to create those opportunities for oneself as well and meet people halfway. Give them the opportunity to give you an opportunity and work with you and to work together.
Tasha, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Brainard. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.